Well, we'll
continue our discussion of the resurrection. And I think it's important to think about the way that Paul used the resurrection, the importance that he attached to it. So tonight we're going to talk about Paul's use of the resurrection of Jesus as a metaphor for us. Now, as we begin, this is a distinct shift from the Old Testament metaphor that came from the idea of resurrection. In the Old Testament, the resurrection was not individual, it was a national return for the remnant that remained faithful to God. So that's the point in Ezekiel's Valley of the Dry Bones. When those dry bones come back together, the sinews again appear, and those bones now have life. That's a picture of resurrection. But in the Old Testament, it was a national renewal. For us, the focus of the metaphor is on us individually. It's not on a nation. It's on us individually. Now, as we think about Paul using this idea of the metaphor, Jesus being raised from the dead is a picture of something that happens in our lives. It's important that we remember that that's not the only way that Paul talked about resurrection. Now, we've already talked about some of what he wrote last week. Next week, we'll talk about his major treatise on the resurrection out of 1 Corinthians 15. But one of the things that we noted about the Sadducees, and I think this is a new understanding for me. The Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. They had a picture of resurrection that was incomplete. They saw resurrection as only a metaphor. So they would have said, resurrection is going to happen, but it's just a spiritual event. It's not something that's real. It's only a metaphor. The Pharisees, on the other hand, had a pretty complete understanding of resurrection. The Sadducees denied resurrection. I don't think that they denied resurrection is in its entirety, but they had the wrong picture of resurrection. So when Paul is called on the carpet and has to defend himself, he talks about the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. That was a very real thing. It wasn't just a metaphor. Now, why do I say that that's important? Because there are people today who look at the resurrection and they say it's past already. It was something that had a meaning in a spiritual sense, but it's not real. And it's a philosophy that comes out of an understanding of the book of Revelation. It's a philosophy that has been referred to as fulfilled eschatology or an 80-70 doctrine. Just remember that when the apostle talks about resurrection as a metaphor in our life, it's a metaphor, but it's also something that's very, very real. Not just a metaphor without any real substance. Anybody heard of this fulfilled eschatology approach to understanding AD 70, everything happened in AD 70, and all of the New Testament has been fulfilled. All prophecy has been fulfilled. There is nothing beyond that. Now, it's not as prevalent as it was in the, I would say, in the 90s. It seems to have passed. People looked at it more closely, and they were, for the most part, rejected this idea. But it is something that you need to be aware of. So, why do we discuss a metaphor? What's the purpose for trying to understand how this is a picture of something that happens in our life? Any ideas?
Supposed to make it easier because of the examples that they give, sort of like in simplicity, the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. It's, you know.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, Bill.
Okay, when you say a metaphor, how are you using the term?
It's a real substance that can picture something that happens in our life.
That's going to happen or that did happen?
That is going to happen. Hold on, I've got to turn my hearing aids up louder. So it's a picture of something that is going to happen. Remember, that's one of the themes that we saw as we were looking at just a quick survey of New Testament information. Jesus is the first fruits, and we're going to follow him. So the reality of his resurrection is a picture of something that's happening in our lives now, and it's the assurance that we will also have the same substance in the future.
So that's what they were talking about when they said Jesus was yet to come during the law era?
In the Old Testament, it was a metaphor because it had to happen. The one we're talking about now is like baptism. We die and we rise again in newness of life. And it's a real thing. It's not just a fairy tale. It's real.
Yeah, it's a very real thing. And in some ways, we don't think of baptism as being as drastic as death. But it is.
It is.
It's putting to death and raising to new life. And I'm not sure that we appreciate that all the time. I'm pretty sure that when I was baptized, I didn't appreciate that. I didn't quite understand it. I didn't think of it that way. But that's what it is. You are in baptism telling someone, you can put me to death because you can raise me again. You can give me a new life. Okay, yeah, Bill.
However, that is normally a joyous occasion where the grave is not.
That's true. And I think it in part, we focus only on the resurrection and not the death part. And we miss that we have to die. The decision to let ourselves be put to death means that you give up everything that you know. All of the ways that you've figured out to react to the world around you don't work in this new world. They're gone. And I'm just not sure that we think about the magnitude of what's happening in baptism.
The real thing really important is that you're forgiven of your sins. To think that we could have that is awesome by itself, because we all sin and come short of the glory of God. We know that. But when you realize that God can save you from that through Jesus's death, burial, and resurrection, it makes you happy, and you're just ready to die because of that. I want my sins forgiven so that I can be with Christ.
That's true. But the old man doesn't give that up easily. Okay? We think, why would anybody not want to be baptized? Because I have a way of relating to the world around me, and I kind of like it. It works in some ways. And I think giving that up, there's a reason why we're buried with him, we're crucified with him. As much as Jesus was willing to go to the cross, that was hard. That was painful. And when you put the old man to death, that's hard and it's painful. That old man doesn't want to die. He wants to live. So it's a struggle. And it ought to be. If we really understand what we're doing, we're putting that old man completely to death. Yeah, Carol.
Well, none of us really understand what God is offering. Because you just don't. It's, if I compare it to people who say about being married, I mean, what the bride and groom know compared to what the people who've been married 50 or 60 years about love is nothing. And so it's just, you know enough to do it. But you really don't have, later on you go, well, how did I not think of that, or how did I not see that clearer, or whatever? But it's, you saw enough to take the first step, and that's all that people can do, and that's why people fall away, is they're willing to take the first step, but they're not willing to love God with all their heart and all their mind and all their soul and give up that dead person, even when it was something that gave them pleasure.
That there's a lot of validity to that. We do learn more about our new life every day, and it becomes more worthwhile. And I think we learn the value in putting the old man to death. But, well, this is what the apostle said in Ephesians 2, verse 1, and then we'll also look at verses 4 through 6. You used to be dead because of offenses and sins, but God, who is rich in mercy because of his love for us, even when we were dead because of our offenses, made us alive together with the Messiah, and parenthetically, by grace you've been saved, raised up us up with him, and seated us with him in the heavenly realm in the Messiah, Jesus. So there is a sense in which, and don't get me wrong, our resurrection has already happened. Okay? We have been brought to life. That's not to say that's all that there is to resurrection. That would be to miss the point of resurrection being bodily, of being a bodily reality. But in a sense, our resurrection has happened. It happened when we came out of baptism, when we came out of the water. He raised us up. Yeah, Carol.
He raised us to life, and that's why our name is written in the book of life. And that's why we don't want him to blot our name out of the book of life.
Well, that's true. That's true. So it is, in a sense, our resurrection happened at baptism. Okay. Not the physical resurrection, the bodily resurrection. That's not what happened at baptism. But something very special happened at baptism. We've been raised up with him. We were dead in trespasses and sins. And then he raised us up. Okay. That misses the point. Or doesn't make the point that we died with him in baptism. He's saying we were already dead. And in a sense, that's true. And then we're raised to walk in newness of life. That doesn't make the point that we died with him in baptism. The old man died. Now, the old man was as good as dead anyway, but the old man died. The reality of Jesus' death and resurrection necessitates a profound change in his followers. In being saved, we've been rescued from death. We're raised, resurrected, we have fellowship with Jesus. We are then obligated to live like that's true.
I know I went ahead again, but there is another resurrection. That will be when Jesus comes again and the dead from the grave will come. Everybody will come and face judgment. That's...
You're absolutely right, Jimmy. That's the bodily aspect of this. Okay? That's a bodily aspect. You're right. Jesus is the first fruits. We're going to follow him in being bodily raised from the dead. This is Ephesians 4. Verse 22, regarding your former way of life, you were taught to strip off your old nature, which is being ruined by its deceptive desires, to be renewed in your mental attitude, and to clothe yourself with a new nature, created in God's image in righteousness and true holiness. That's being raised to be a new creature. And that's what I am now. I'm a new creature. I'm raised to be that. Look at Colossians 2, verse 12. When you were buried with the Messiah in baptism, you were also raised with him through faith in the power of God who raised him from the dead. So his bodily resurrection gives us a picture of what happens to us at baptism. We're raised. Even when you were dead because of your offenses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made you alive with him when he forgave us all of our offenses. That's baptism. Having erased the charges that were brought against us, along with the obligations that were hostile to us, charges were made against us that we were sinners, and because the charge was made and the charge was true, that meant that you were subject to death. That's the handwriting of ordinances that was against us. Okay? None of us could deny that we were sinners. He took those charges away. He nailed them to the cross. He didn't take away the law. What he took away was the charge against us and the penalty that the law specified. Look at Colossians 3. If you've been raised with the Messiah, that's what we are now, raised with the Messiah. Keep focusing on the things that are above, where the Messiah is seated on the right hand, or at the right hand of God. Keep your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. For you have died, and your life has been safely guarded by the Messiah in God. You have died, and now you have life. That's a resurrected life. Okay? When the Messiah, who is your life, is revealed, then you too will be revealed with him in glory. So there is a bodily resurrection coming. Jimmy is absolutely right. But we're also raised right now. Look at Romans 6. This is a long reading. This is verses 1 through 14. And we spent some time discussing this when we were going through Romans, so we won't talk about all of the things that we talked about when we went through Romans. But this is the way that Paul uses this idea that we're raised. He says, what should we say then? Should we go on sinning that grace may increase? Well, of course not. How can we who have died, as far as sin is concerned, go on living in it? Okay? There's a sense in which we were dead because of sins. Okay? But there's something very special that happened at baptism. We died. So that man is dead. It doesn't make any sense to say that you would go on sinning because that man is dead. Don't you know that all of us who were baptized into union with the Messiah Jesus were baptized into his death? Therefore, through baptism, we are buried with him into his death, so that just as the Messiah was raised from the dead by the Father's glory, we too may live an entirely new life. That's now. That's the life that we're living now. It's not something we'll look forward to. I look forward to the bodily resurrection as well, but we have to understand resurrection is something that we have in a sense now. Now he continues, if we become united with him in a death like his, so we died like he died, certainly we'd be united with him in a resurrection like his. We know that our old natures were crucified with him so that our sin-laden bodies might be rendered powerless and we should no longer be slaves to sin. The person who has died has been freed from sin. The baptism is a monumentous event, more powerful than I think we sometimes admit. If we have died with the Messiah, we believe that we will live with him. For we know that the Messiah who was raised from the dead will never die again. Death no longer has mastery over him. When he died once and for all as far as sin is concerned. And we're dying just like he did, once and for all as far as sin is concerned. That's not the person we are. Now that he's alive, he lives for God. In the same way, you too must continually consider yourself dead as far as sin is concerned, but living for God. See, this new life that we have is a marvelous thing. Far greater than I think what we give it credit for. We think something marvelous happened at baptism, but I don't know if we go far enough. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal bodies to obey their desires. Stop offering the parts of your body to sin as instruments of unrighteousness. Instead, offer yourselves to God as people who have been brought from death to life, and the parts of your body as instruments of righteousness to God. Sin will not have mastery over you because you are not under law but under grace. You couldn't get this from the law. Wasn't possible. You had to have Jesus die. And what you have now is beyond what you can imagine. If the Messiah is in you, your bodies are dead to sin, or dead due to sin. The Spirit is alive due to righteousness. And if the Spirit of the one who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, then the one who raised the Messiah from the dead will also make your mortal bodies alive by his Spirit who lives in you. A fantastic promise. That's not to say that we can't give that up and go back to what we were. I can't imagine why anybody would want to. The way the apostle describes it in Hebrews, that's like the dog returning to its own vomit again, the sow that was washed to its wallowing in the mire. We can go back if we want to. Can't imagine anybody would want to, though. So that's why Paul says, should we continue to sin that grace may abound? Grace was never intended as a way for an old man to live without repercussion. And I think that's the way some people view grace. It allows me to continue to sin without any repercussions. Grace was never intended to do that. It was intended to let you be a new creature. So, you know, I hear people talk about how grace covers sin and how grace means that God doesn't consider me a sinner. Grace was never intended to let you continue to be what you were before baptism and just not have to deal with repercussions. That wasn't its function. Its function was to create in you a new man. Okay? So this idea of resurrection as metaphor, I think it means a lot in our lives. And I'm amazed at what it makes possible. Because frankly, I couldn't have lived this way when I was an old man. I couldn't do it. I had to put that old man to death. And yeah, I still have struggles. I have struggles keeping him in the grave. But really, there's nothing about it that's attractive. We don't go back there. Questions? Comments? I know that this is we've kind of focused on some parts of public discussions that we don't always focus on. The metaphorical parts. But I think it's important that we realize that these are here. Comment. Yeah, Bill.
I think I have a hard question. I'm not sure if it's exactly online, but it came to mind. When the judgment day comes and we're raised from our grave, when we go to the judgment and stand before God, I'm assuming that that's not just a metaphorical thing, but are we raised in our earthly bodies for the judgment to get our heavenly bodies after the judgment?
Don't know the answer to that. And we'll see that next week when we talk about 1 Corinthians 15. The body that's sown is not the body that's raised. The body that is buried in the ground is not the body that comes out. It's like the way he explains it in 1 Corinthians 15 is a grain of wheat. A grain of wheat falls in the ground. What comes out is not a grain of wheat. It's a wheat plant. It's related to the grain of wheat, but I'm not sure I can define exactly how that looks, how that works. Yeah.
And the only identification we have with it is Jesus' body. And what we're told about Jesus' body, it was in a physical form that could be touched, that could be handled, that was recognized by the disciples that had the scars from his crucifixion. But it was not a physical body. It was a flesh and blood body. It could be physically touched, but it was not a heartbeat coursing through. It was a resurrection body. Whatever that is.
Remember on one occasion, Jesus told Thomas, put your hand in the hole in my body. You will know that it's me. I was crucified. Okay. On another occasion, he said, don't touch me. I haven't ascended to the Father yet. I don't know what was going on there.
There's one thing that I thought of when you said that. It says that it's talking about the end of the world when it's going to be dissolved. It says our bodies will be instantly changed into a spirit form. It doesn't word it that way, but it says at the end, you'll be changed in an instant.
Yeah, that's a reference to those that are alive and remain until the day that Jesus comes back again and everyone is raised from the dead.
Well, we won't come in bodily form, because if our mate isn't there with us, if there's marriage in heaven, then it's completely different. And you wouldn't be happy if you thought that. So I always think we'll be spirits when we go there. That's just my understanding of that.
Yeah. Kim's glad we're not going to be married in heaven. She's had me long enough. I'm teasing when I say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, to we just don't have enough information there. It may be that the body that exists after the bodily resurrection is something that we can't conceptualize, because I only think in terms of this as a body. Okay.
Our spiritual bodies won't have the same desires that our physical bodies have.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, Lenny?
We will not experience pain like we do here. That'll be all gone.
Right. Right. No tears, no sorrows. That's hard for me to imagine that. Just like it's a little bit hard for me to imagine that the Dean that I am today is the new Dean. It's not the old Dean. Okay. And people who knew the old Dean see the new Dean and they think it's the same. Because both of them look the same, but it's not. Yeah.
Well, many of us were baptized when we were much younger. And when you're much younger, you don't look at yourself as an old man. That terminology just doesn't sink in right. It takes a while for that to sink in.
That's true. That's true. And I have, I'm absolutely sure that we grow in our knowledge, or we should grow in our knowledge. And that's what Paul told the early Christians. When for the time you ought to be teachers, you have need of one teacher again. And you're become subjects have need of milk, not of strong meat. When we first become Christians, we don't understand everything there is to understand. And I am convinced that when I'm as old as Lenny is, I still won't understand. Picking on you, Lenny. You know, I still won't understand everything that there is to understand.
I also remember when God created man, they decided to... They made a plan for us to be saved and so forth. But he breathed his spirit into one part of man is spiritual and one part is physical, and they're different. And so that makes me think, too, only the spirit could go to heaven anyway, because that old man, the real flesh and blood is gone, and then there's a spirit, but it lives forever, quote. Whether it's wicked or, I lost my word, good, I'll just say that when we're saved, our spirits will go to heaven, and the other ones, when they go up there to be judged, will go to Hades, or the place of the grave, but I think there's a real hell, from what I can read, but they won't be with us, because they have a different judgment.
A different sentencing.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Same judgment, different sentence.
Yes, that's true. But they have to be judged first before they're sentenced. Just teasing you a little bit.
Okay. That's okay. Okay. Well, thank you for bearing with me as we go through this and think about a metaphor and what this really means for us. It's a great thing to be a resurrected person. I can't imagine anybody ever leaving that, giving it up and saying, you know, I think I want to be dead again. But there are people who do that. And they want to return. Many times they desperately want to return to a life that God has given. And God is always willing to accept us back, thankfully. It's kind of like the father and the prodigal. When the prodigal was a long way off, the father ran to meet him. And I think that's what God would do for us. He would run to meet us if we wanted to come back. Confess our faults one to another. Pray one for another that you may be healed. That's what we do. And we always do that.